Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Musical Connections Podcast. This is the show where we connect the music of Newfoundland and Labrador with the world. So come along with me now as we discover more about the music of Newfoundland and Labrador. I'm your host, Zach Snow, and I got another great episode lined up for you this week. This is the main episode of the podcast, as I dropped a bonus episode the day that I'm recording this. So we don't stop here on Musical Connections, as the East Coast Music Awards start tomorrow, and I'm super excited about that. Musical Connections will be there all week doing interviews that'll air over the next few weeks and months. In the meantime, today's conversation, I'll be connecting with music engineer, audio producer, and singer-songwriter, the Wild Finger, Jim Mercer. I talked to him about his viral song, Don't Tell Me What to Do, which he released as a demo on Facebook November 20th, 2024, and how he recorded that with some of Nashville's finest and with an old friend of his. Plus, we'll talk about his favorite memories of Wild Finger Production Studios out in Shearstown. And we're also going to talk about some great memories of recording with John White and recording with the man of a thousand songs, Ron Hines, as they were floating around demos for Mary Got a Baby, and just talking about some of his favorite memories of recording down at that studio and how it all started for him. We're going to get to that right after we get through the new found releases of the week. These songs came out between April 27th to May the 3rd. And our first new found release comes from a living legend. Bud Davidge dropped his most recent studio album, All for a Song, and it features such songs that he released over the course of the past 5 years, such as Can't You Understand That, and Turkey at Nannies and Pops. Well, right now from his brand new album, All for a Song, here is Bud Davidge and the Seaman's Wife on the Musical Connections Podcast.
There's many a tale of courage throughout our history, about those who make their living from the harvest of the sea, about the strong, determined women folk, though not before the mast, who toil to keep the home fires bright till the boats come home at last. No words can tell their stories of the heartaches born with grace, but the truth is told in the lines that's etched upon a widow's face. Through the lonely nights her dim light glow and cast a ray of hope across the storm-tossed ocean for to guide the sailors home, to talk about the part they played would fill too many a page, how they work and worry day and night with little ones to raise, and teach them how to read and write and learn to kneel and pray, and say it's true they also serve who toil at home and wait. She soon forgets the dark clouds when storms have blown away, and word goes out that a schooner's sails are sighted on the bay. Soon the men will hold their ladies close and children part their dads. Hear them tell those seamen stories about the bumper trip they had, to talk about the part they played would fill too many a page, how they work and worry day and night with little ones to raise, and teach them how to read and write and learn to kneel and pray, and say it's true they also serve who toil at home and wait. say it's true, they also serve who toil at home and wait.
That was Bud Davidge with The Seaman's Wife on the Musical Connections podcast. And our next newfound release of the week comes from The Order of the Precious Blood. We haven't heard from them in quite a while, and their last song, Suffer and Die, came out, I think it was April of last year. And they worked on this brand new song, too, with a music video to boot that was done by Grind Mind. Here are The Order of the Precious Blood for you now, and this song will leave you terrified. On that note, here is Terrified from The Order of the Precious Blood on the Musical Connections podcast. That was The Order of the Precious Blood with Terrified here on Musical Connections. Our next newfound release comes from The Fence Sitters. Here is Flight Song on the Musical Connections podcast.
Best of friends met on the night, really they're the only You shut up. I spent thousands on this flight. You better get me on that flight. Or else I'll start pulling teeth,
I'm sorry,
okay?
You have
no
nothing
idea. I've been waiting for this for such a fucking long time. Such a fucking long time.
That's a lie. They made me wait 24 hours in Toronto Airport because I had to get two separate flights on two separate days. Now for $200 less, you can get a flight with Air Canada that had the connection. So may you live in Infamy Swoop. Rest in peace. Goodbye.
Those were the Fence Sitters with Flight Song on Musical Connections. And our last newfound release comes from Cornerbrook experimental duo White Rhino. They put out their album Dream Tower on Thursday. It is, of course, released by Milltown Records out in Cornerbrook, a subsidiary of Laughing Heart Music. Big thank you to Debbie Brown from Milltown Records for sending this along to me. And here's the last track you'll hear on Dream Tower. From White Rhino, here is Carpet Tile on the Musical Connections podcast.
Thank you.
That does it for our newfound releases of the week. For any musicians in Newfoundland and Labrador that want to be a part of this segment, feel free to email musicalconnectionsnl@gmail.com for any questions that you may have. I'll send you off a newfound releases guide, and I will let you know what you need to have in order to qualify for newfound releases for a certain week. I'll be looking for songs now that are coming out between May 4th to the 10th, and this is going to be a very busy week as the 2025 East Coast Music Awards begin tomorrow. I'm looking forward to meeting all of you guys in St. John's when the East Coast Music Awards Festival and Conference take place, and reconnecting with you as well. So, of course, for any musicians out there that want to be a part of this segment, email musicalconnectionsnl@gmail.com. I got a little carried away there about the East Coast Music Awards, but I have good reason to. I'm very excited about it, and the fact that it's here for the first time in 10 years. Well, now it's time to welcome my guest to Musical Connections this week. I welcome the Wild Finger, Jim Mercer, to my podcast this week. We talk about his viral song, Don't Tell Me What to Do, which he put out about a month or two ago, and he had a successful album release part, and he had a successful single release party at O'Brien's Pub in Bay Roberts. We also talk about how it all started for him and how he got the name Wild Finger Jim Mercer. We also talk about Wild Finger Productions, which housed some legendary artists like John White and the Man of a Thousand Songs, Ron Hines. Plus, what future plans he has in store, and it also includes a new album in the works. All that and more on Musical Connections this week, as I connect with the Wild Finger, Jim Mercer. Greetings, everyone. Welcome back to the Musical Connections podcast. This is the show where we connect the music of Newfoundland and Labrador with the rest of the world. Well, we are going to reconnect you with a guy you may be familiar with if you've ever heard the names Dave Fitzpatrick, you've heard of Ron Hines, you've heard of Glenn Simmons, you've heard of Bill Kelly, the late John White, and more. And if you ever heard of commercials on radio, such for Auto Parts Network, this guy had a hand in producing a lot of that. And he is back in the music game now with a brand new song, which went viral on Facebook from a demo he put out back in November called Don't Tell Me What to Do. Well, I'm going to tell him exactly what to do here today because I want him to go back and recollect some of the memories that he's had over his long career. Joining me today is Jim Mercer, a.k.a. Wild Finger. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for coming in, man. Thanks so much for doing this. And brand new song for your first one in quite some time that's your own. It's called Don't Tell Me What to Do. And it's about, keeping true to your word and just, you know, life is life and live and let live. And just about, you know, when adversity is presented right in front of you, you don't like being told what to do. So you always want to prove people wrong. And you're back at it again and with a brand new song. So how excited are you to finally have a new single out?
Well, it is exciting, Zach, because I haven't put one out for a long time. And as I was mentioned to you before, I'd wake up in the morning, come out, and I'd start playing this song. And I said, I got to do something with this song. And, of course, the excitement builds from there. I got to go back into the recording studio again. And after a long hiatus from the recording scene, it's very exciting. Very exciting.
That's wonderful. And when you first put out this demo back in November, I think it was the 20th of November that you put this out to Facebook.
Yes.
Since I'd imagine when we drop this episode, it'll be getting even more views. But as of now, when we're recording this, the day is April 23rd is when we're shooting this day. It's about 118,000 views on Facebook with about 1,200 shares. Yes. And it's shared to a lot of people all over the world. So when you first put out this demo, did you expect it to get this viral right away?
No, to be honest, I didn't. I thought I just got to get it out of my head and out of my living room and out and let people hear this. And because I've been doing demos for a while on the social media, and some of them, you know, getting up around 20, 30, 40,000 views and such over a bit of time. But I never thought this would go, would climb so high so fast. And as you say, viral, I guess, when it comes to Facebook, because it takes a bit to to get something to go viral on Facebook.
Yes, and it takes a lot of like shares to really get it up to that level.
Yes.
But of course, this now is out to the public. You had a successful single release show at O'Brien's Pub, I think it was April 12th in Bay Roberts. Mm-hmm. And you had a really great crowd. And again, it's your first new song that you put out by yourself, I would imagine, in a very, very long time. And like, how long are we talking about when it comes to the new music from you?
Oh, boy. Since 93.
Wow.
Since, in 93, I did an original album called Who's Gonna Pay My Bills? Who's Gonna Pay My Bills? And then I did one a couple of years after that, probably in 94, 95, somewhere around there. I'm not sure exactly, but I did a Christmas compilation of old favorites, you know, and one original on that one. But I don't really consider that any great accomplishment, but the work I did with Who's Going to Pay My Bills, I had a lot of great players playing on that, Dave Fitz and Glenn Simmons and Wint Saunders, and that was an exciting time. And that's how long it's been since I put something out.
And that's insane to believe that.
It's
like,
insane, yeah.
Almost like, geez, 93. It's about over 3 decades since you put out new music.
Yeah,
now, you have put out work on music for other artists here in Newfoundland and Labrador.
Yes.
Just listing off a couple of them. You've worked on an album for Bill Kelly, of course, of Stoggertide fame.
Yes.
And stuff like that. You also worked on, you also helped out John White back in the day as well. I think you recorded A Sign the Past, A Sign for the Past in Wildfinger Studios, and I think Dave Fitz was the producer of that record.
Yes, great.
And
time
that must have been a really good experience
to
work with John White.
It was really awesome. It was excellent to meet John White and to finally see him get something done that he was proud of, because he was telling me he never really got to sing the songs that he wanted to sing, and all during his career. They were always, for me, or for him, he said he was told what songs they want to sing at that time. And for him to do the songs that he wanted to do was really nice for him. And I was glad to be a part of that.
So what do you remember most about hanging out with John White?
Oh, boy, I can tell you some stories. First, when he came in the studio, I had two dogs. I had a Labrador Retriever and a Dalmatian. Of course, they come up sniffing to him and everything else. And John goes to the dogs. He says, well, no good to be sniffing at me, boys. He said, because there's nothing on me. He said, on his skin over bone, right? And got us all, cracked us all up laughing right away, right? But anyway, and that was a funny story coming in for his intro. But he was a very pleasant man. I found John to be very pleasant and enjoyed his talents and his singing.
Yeah, and he was known as Skinny White for a reason.
Skinny for a reason, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Of course, at that time, and John was getting up in age, of course, right? And so how we did the recording, John would be in the isolation booth, and I'll be out in the control room. And so we can only do so many lines of a song at a time. Because John, he had the pilfer in one hand and the cigarette in another hand.
Oh, my God.
So this is how we did the album. And I say, John, I don't know how you do it, but it was, that's the way we recorded that album.
And that was like during a time where, like, you know, like booze and cigarettes and all that were, like, dominating the music scene here.
And I didn't really have any smoking in my studio, but I let John smoke in the studio, right?
Because it's John White.
It was John White, yeah, and he was in there doing it, and he had us cracked up laughing with all kinds of jokes and stories he used to tell us, right? But that part he said, Jimmy, hang on now. He said, I got to have a puff. I didn't know which puff you're going to have, a puff out the puffer or a puff out the cigarette, right?
So was that a pipe or something? Or was that like an inhaler?
It was an inhaler, the inhaler he used to have for his asthma or his breathing for... And he'd smoke at the same time.
Jeez, that's bad for your lungs.
That's bad for your lungs. But, John was old school. And I guess for him, that's the way he lived.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of stories we can talk about John White here. I mean, like, stories that I can, like, know for the first time because I wasn't really alive then when John White was at his prime. No. And especially, you know, when John was on, was heading up for the pearly
circle,
gates.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, my father would probably know more about that than I would.
Oh, yes, I remember seeing John on All Around the Circle as a young boy.
And Ray Walsh as well.
And Ray Walsh, yeah.
Now, one of the interesting things that I found out while researching for this interview here, you invited, Glenn Simmons was one of your players that went to Wildfinger Studios for a very long time.
Yeah.
But he also played with Ron Hines, and of course they both played together in the Wonderful Grand Band together. Mm-hmm. And then Ron had him in his band when he signed with EMI, recorded Friar's Paradise and Face to the Gale. And he also recorded an album called 1111, Newfoundland Women Sing. So it was a bunch of Newfoundland Labrador women musicians that would sing songs that Ron and Connie Hines wrote. And one of those songs was Mary Got a Baby, which ended up being sung by Colleen Power. And this is really interesting. I really was taken away by this.
Yeah.
Ron and Glenn flirted with some demos in your studio.
Yes.
How must that have felt that day when Ron and Glenn were, like, you know, flirting away with Mary Got a Baby?
Well, to be honest, I was kind of surprised that they wanted to come out to my studio. Because there were several studios here in town at the time. But I guess it was through Glenn. Glenn and I were doing some work together on different projects. And he must have told Ron, and Ron said, well, let's go out and do the demos. Of course, this is the demo of the song, Mary Had a Baby, which I come to find out after. And what an excellent, excellent recording session we had that day. And Ron was on his game. Everybody was on their game. And the demos came out so good. I thought they could have went right to CD or tape right away. But Ron is he's quite the character. I was surprised but excited at the same time because I knew the reputation that Ron had for playing and singing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, and with the wonderful grand band with Glenn and the other guys.
Oh yes.
So that was an honor to have Ron in the studio. I bragged about Ron quite a bit then after that, about being in the studio.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You can say, like, hey, I had Ron Hines at my studio. Yeah. Like, what have you done?
Yeah, Ron Hines and John White and Bill Kelly.
Just some of Newfoundland Labrador's trailblazers for traditional music or folk music entirely.
Yeah.
Ron's one of our greatest songwriters we've ever produced. Mm-hmm. Do you have any stories about interacting with Ron and, you know, the way he acted when he was in studio?
Well, Ron bought in a bottle of whiskey.
You know what kind?
I can't remember what kind it was, and he planked it down on the table in the center of the control room. He said, we're going to have some fun today. And, of course, among other things, we had a lot of fun that day.
So a lot of whiskey must have been drank.
That bottle didn't last very long.
Oh man, that was a lot. That must have been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Was there anything that Ron ever told you that you've taken away for the rest of your life?
Well, let me see. I can't say for sure anything like that. There was a couple of laughs it's legal now.
Oh yes.
And that was involved at the same time as the bottle of whiskey was, right? and he said to me, he said, Jim, he said, you smoke just as much as I do. Right? And I said, it must be the music that entices everybody to do this. But that was one noted time for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think if there's one thing you take away from Ron Hines, you always knew how to have a good time and really, you know, take away, like, you know, all the seriousness that comes away with music.
Oh, absolutely.
And just bring it back to what it's meant to be, to have fun.
Absolutely. Everything that day was relaxed. It was so relaxed and natural. And that probably contributed a lot to the demos coming out the way they did. Because in studio situation, as you know, people get nervous when the red light goes on and... But Ron was an old hand at it, and there was no nervousness with Ron Hines when you hit the record button.
Oh, yes. For sure he was confident about himself,
oh,
I can
absolutely
tell you that much.
And everybody else that played there that day, and Dave Fitz and Glenn Simmons, and I'm not sure who else was there that day.
Was Sandy Morris part of that session?
I believe Sandy Morris was a part of that session, or Kelly Russell, one of them, was a part of that session.
Yeah, because Kelly played in the Wonderful Grand Band, too, for a bit of time before he really went off with his Pigeon Inlet Productions label. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Kelly's been out to the studio a few times on different projects back at that time.
So when it comes to this whole Wildfinger persona that you've put on for yourself, how did it all start for you, and how did you come up with the name Wildfinger?
Oh, boy. Well, I didn't come up with the name myself. I kind of got labeled with that. And it all started back in, mid-80s, I would say, to late 80s, where I almost had that finger cut off.
Oh, jeez.
And that's the Wildfinger right there, right?
Oh, wow.
So I don't know if you can notice it, but you can see there's a difference in both those fingers. This finger was almost cut off like that. So they had to put a skin graft on my finger. And I had to wear my finger like this for 6 months up above my heart because the skin graft is very delicate.
Okay.
And so when I'd go to a party where my friends are, the first time I went to a party with my hand up like that, and I couldn't play guitar, of course, the boys... was going to make fun and going to have a joke out of it. And they said, Jimmy, that's a pretty wild-looking finger you got there. We'll have to call you Jimmy Wildfinger. Of course, everybody had a good laugh. And lo and behold, the name just stuck. And every time I see the boys or my friends, they would say, they'd call me Wildfinger. How's it going? Wildfinger. Right? And of course, it just stuck. And I couldn't shake it. And then that's what I called my studio then, Wildfinger Productions. And of course... there it is, Wildfinger.
And the rest they say is history.
It's history, in a nutshell.
So let's go to that next. You opened that in 1993. You opened it in Roach's Line out in Shearstown, or actually North River?
That's around Cubitt's Crossing, actually.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of in on a street that's... I was the last house in.
Oh, wow.
I looked for this house for a long time because I wanted a house that was away from all the traffic and the riffraff of anything going on, so, because I was building a studio and I didn't want heavy trucks and that passing by when I was in recording sessions, because it's hard to get rid of those rumbles and of heavy trucks and such. But that's where I bought the house, and the whole studio I dedicated to Wildfinger Studio. So we had a control room and a drum room and a vocal booth all isolated.
Wow. And that was like 1993.
That was 93.
So the technology then, I'd say technology in like music, when you recorded music back in the day, were you still using...
Can I do this first before you go far?
No, go for it.
The gear that I used in the studio, I bought from Jack Windsor from Long's Hill.
Wow!
I bought out his studio.
No way!
Yes, it was up. It was up for sale, and there was a lot of people that bid on that, and I won the bid.
That's insane! Yeah. I was actually going to get to the gear next, because I would imagine in '93 the gear back then.
Yeah.
And I think you were still going from like the analog days to digital.
Right. It was just on the cusp.
Yeah. Were you still using analog back then, or yes. Were you just transitioning over to a digital?
It was still analog. It was a 16-track Tascam and a 32-channel board, and that's what we recorded on analog. Of course, when we had to edit, we'd have to actually physically cut the tape.
Oh, wow!
Back then, right?
That's nuts.
Yeah.
I would not be able to do that because,
well, you know, it's a little tedious. There's no doubt about it, because if you made a mistake and cut the wrong place, and
that messes up the whole recording.
Yeah, you can mess up the whole recording that way.
And like, I kind of, that's why I like hearing that now. Like, I would probably take editing on Adobe Audition or Audacity, the software that I use to edit my shows, my podcast, mm-hmm. for granted, mm-hmm. really, because like, you never really know how to edit until you went through those days where you had to like cut tape of string
cut it with a razor, yeah.
Oh, a razor?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That must have been a hellhole to, like, figure out.
Yes, it was. It was. And hopefully you try to avoid cutting the 16-track. You would usually cut the 2-track.
Oh, wow.
If you want to splice up different parts to edit out sections and say make the song. Depending on how you were making the song, if it was verse, chorus, or verse, chorus, bridge, and stuff like that, you would edit to make it fit whatever way you wanted to the format of the song to be, right?
I would be
time consuming.
Oh, time consuming it is.
It's very time consuming. Yeah,
that's why I'm fortunate now to have the software that I do, because it's easier now more than ever.
Yeah.
And a lot of people can really do it from their basements if they can put the money and time into it.
Yes. Yes. It's just a couple of clicks now. Editing is a breeze. People don't know how good they really have in the recording world. Yeah. And, of course, I love the new technology as well. And But I was out of the loop for a long time. And just recently got back into it in the last couple of years.
Now, where have you been in that case? Because I would imagine you've recorded like very religiously from when you opened the studio in 93. And I believe when you and I were talking about this off air here, you closed the studio in the late 2000s. Right. So what were you doing in between that time from when you closed the studio to this new song you got out right now?
Okay. It was quite a span of time there, actually. Well, unfortunately, divorce came my way, and the studio being in my house, and I had to close the studio and get ready to move it somewhere else. I don't know where I was going to move this big, I believe it was a 64 channel, and not a 32 channel. When I think about it now, it's almost as long as this table.
Oh, yeah.
It was huge. And where am I going to get a place to put all this gear? I mean, all this is big analog gear. And how am I going to set up shop right away and all this? And all that costs a lot of money to do that stuff.
Yeah.
So I couldn't do that right away. And I said, well, I got to go back at my job, which is, I'm an iron worker by trade. And that's what I did. I went out west and got back into my trade and got myself positioned to come back and open the studio again. And upgraded to a new digital system. And did a few little things while I was back and forth to work. Then boom, in 2015, I believe. I think it was 2015, I had a heart attack. And which, of course, threw me out of commission and threw a wrench into the spokes of life, as we say, right? And changed the plans altogether again. I'll have to deal with that, and it took some time to get over that and get back into the workforce again and try to get myself positioned again. And to make a long story short, in 2019, I had cancer come around the corner and nailed me, dealt with that, and then I think it was around 23, somewhere around there, got cancer again, had to deal with that. So when you have a cancer, and when you have a heart attack, that's a major blow. And when you have cancer and you have a major surgery, that's a big blow. When you have it twice, it's a huge blow. And it does things to the psyche.
Yes.
It does things to the psyche that... you say, my God, am I going to pull out of this? And, of course, you got your music nagging at you in the back of your mind. You want to play. You've been playing all these years, and you can't play because you got the heel. So in between the jigs and the reels, it took a long time to come out of that. I'm not ashamed to say it. I went into some kind of a clinical depression, but the music pulled me out of it. I wasn't labeled with that, but... It felt weird.
Yeah, but couldn't blame you for like going to like a depressive state for that, because yeah. You had like three separate like life challenges that were presented your way. Of course, like from 2015 on, you had the heart attack and you had a couple bouts of cancer, and then you had to close the studio because of divorce in 2007.
Yeah,
I couldn't blame you for going into that like kind of depressive state, because when you've been dealt all these blows, it does something to you, and it prevents you from doing what you love to do, which, at the end of the day, is music.
Yeah, 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 and being a musician, a passionate musician with that.
Yes.
I mean, not just a hobbyist. It was a passion. And, yeah. So I leaned on my music. And actually, my music got me through. And God bless music. Got me through this. It got me through the whole thing. And I've got certain songs that's in the burner that I'm working on involves some of those dark days.
Mm-hmm.
And but leading up to the song, so it was a year or so after I got better from the last bout of cancer. I started to go 24. It took me a year or so to get over that again. In 24, I said, I got to get out and start playing again and get myself back on the scene because, you know, you get out of touch with technology, you get out of touch with friends, you get out of touch with the nightclubs and the venues and everything else. So you're kind of starting from scratch again. And, of course, you know, not to mention your skills that you had built up in regards of singing and playing, all that had to be rebuilt again, because you got no on your fingers,
like no tip
from playing guitars,
no calluses.
Calluses. Why is that word so hard to reach?
No, it's all good.
Yeah, there's no calluses, and you know, you're out of touch. Your rhythm and your playing, your tempo and everything is all out of touch. So you got to get all that back again. To get back out on stage. So I got back out on stage again, and it started to come around.
Mm-hmm.
And did quite a few shows, you know, played once or twice every week. got my skills built up again. And, of course, then in between that, I've been trying to write songs. I've been working on an album for about 5 years.
Oh, my God.
And but, you know, like these... these things, like I said, crept up and kept pushing back the date.
Did you ever think, with all the things that happened in your life in the span of those like 10 to 15 year period, that you'd be playing music again and be out playing again?
Well, it's that little nagging. What's it? Okay, this person.
It's like the chip on your shoulder.
Yeah. It's like this fellow is saying, Jim, you got to go play. And this fellow is saying, Jim, you got to let yourself heal. And I'm saying, okay, I've healed long enough. I'm on the go now. And this fellow, yes, get out and start playing. So that's what I did. I started booking myself and get out and start playing. And because, you know, I'm not getting any younger. I got music that I want to sing to the world. I want to get it out there. And that's what I did. And then... The songs that I have in the album that I was working on was more on the blues side of things until this song, Don't Tell Me What to Do, came along. Now, I've always liked country, and I've played country in my sets, but I was more known for my classic rock and my blues sets, because you know, I play harmonica as well, and it goes kind of hand in hand with those styles.
Mm-hmm.
And one morning just got up and started writing this song. Actually, what triggered the song is my life experiences with this. Because the way I write sometimes, I'll just grab a melody and a few chords and start singing. And sometimes the first things that come into your mind will end up being part of that song, depending on what the melody is and what style I'm playing. But what kickstarted the song was I was at a club playing one night, and I heard this person tell another person, "Don't tell me what to do." And I had to laugh for myself. I just laughed in my mind. I said, "That's so funny, because a person told me that not too long ago, and I remember telling some other people not to tell me what to do." And I said, "People, you know, people really don't really want to be told what to do."
And no, absolutely not.
And I said, "Why is that sticking in my head like that?" And I got up, like I said, one morning, and I started writing. I didn't write them down, because I don't write my lyrics anymore. I just start singing them. Before, I used to write them down.
Yes.
Now, I just start singing them.
Okay, interesting.
Yes, and if I got a theme, I'll start singing around that theme. So with that, Don't Tell Me What to Do, that's how that song started, from that conversation that I heard at that club that night, and from my life experiences of people saying it to me or me saying it to other people. And I just said, and the first words that came out of my mouth was, we can hang out here all night and tell each other stories at the nightclub. And that's where the song really, really started from. And then, of course, it built from that. And I never did write down the lyrics on a piece of paper until lately I had to write them down, because I want to, you know, show other people, let them see the lyrics. And I'm going to put them on. I got a new music video coming out, and I'm going to be putting it on the video. So people like to see the lyrics and sing along with them sometimes if they like the song, right?
And that could be a karaoke song, too.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I have a couple of DJs that work it around here want the song right away. I said, Jim, give me the song, send me the song, and I'll play it at all my karaoke shows. I said, perfect. That'll help get it out there.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah. Now, of course, we're going to get to that song right after this conversation here on the podcast. You said you've been working on this album for 5 years.
Yeah.
So what's the status on that right now?
The status on that is kind of still on the burner. And and the reason it's still on the burner, is like I said, I went through those medical issues, which set me back there on those as well. But now I've been working on this song. My studio, it's kind of is in limbo right now, because I wasn't able to do a certain amount of type of work on my iMac that I could before, because she's getting older. So now I'm in the market to buying a new iMac to continue on with that album and my songs that I'm going forward. I got a couple more songs in the pot. And that's where that sits at now. I'm going to resurrect it as soon as I get my studio back up again.
On that note too, like, would you be interested in, say, working with other people, say if they needed a song recorded, would you do that for them?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'm not open to the public per se, be going full tilt and recording somebody.
But if someone wanted a song there and probably had, like, say, one or two a yes. month that you could work on, then that could be something you could pursue.
Because yes, I'm not really set up there for to have a drummer. And although I have set the drummer up in the kitchen before.
Oh, what?
Yeah, I can send you pictures of that. I forget his name. I did an album for him there before I got sick. Those medical issues came on. Anyway, we had to set the drums up in the kitchen because the studio now, the footprint is not as big as the big studio I had in 93 with the, 1,000 or 1,200 square feet of my house using up. Right now, the studio I have is about, maybe 100, 150 square feet, 200 at the max, with an isolation booth for vocals and overdubs and whatever I need to do with instruments. Never had no capacity for setting up drums. Because I never intended to start recording anybody anymore. I was just going to do my own stuff. And if I wanted somebody to come in and do drums, I would do set up in the kitchen.
Oh, jeez.
So this is what I did for this fellow. He went to, and I can't recall his name now for the life of me. We set up the drums in the kitchen. And what a friggin' sound we got from from those drums that day. He loved it. I loved it. But regards of recording other people, I would take on smaller projects. If somebody wants to get a demo done of their song and see what they sounded like. And I mean, you can make some really good demos without drums. It's not necessary. But if I had to, I would set the drums up in the kitchen again. But I don't want to go through all that again because it's a lot of work and it's time consuming.
Yeah.
And I got work that and songs that I want to get myself out into the world. So I'll take on some small projects.
That's good to hear that too. The technology, again, back to that for a second. It's come such a long way where you have drum tracks on MIDI tracks now that you can probably just insert and have that for your demo. And then when you get to like recording real drums, you can have that drum track as a reference point to how you want it to sound.
Absolutely, absolutely. And when you set that up like that, a person can do all the tracking that they want to in my studio, say, without the drums, or I can give them a MIDI drum track, and the drums sound fantastic these days with the technology. But if a person wants then a live tracking of drums, they can take that and just send it off to another studio, and boom, you got live drums on your track. That's simple. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's come a long way since you started in 93.
Speaking of amazing, I mean, that's how my song, Don't Tell Me What to Do, was recorded.
No way.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll tell you about, if you want me to give you a little insight on how that song was recorded.
Yeah, because you split some time with this in St. John's and in Nashville.
Yes. Yes, indeed. I mean, after I did the original demo, I did the original demo in my studio and did it with electronic drums and everything else, and put it up and got those views. Then I decided, I must do something with this, because I didn't know it was going to go and take on some the momentum that it did. And I decided to start searching for studios, maybe down in Nashville, because it had a country feel to me, and I wanted to get some really, really good country players playing on there. And so I said, I must look around, and lo and behold, I found these sites in Nashville. I had to go through a couple before I got the right one. But anyway, I ended up doing about half the studio work in my studio, and they did the bed tracks and the other half in their studio. And to make a long story short, I didn't like the way they mixed the album, or the song, I should say. And I said, I got to get this remixed, because I don't like the way they got it done. I'm the producer of this song. I want it to be a certain way. And just like all producers, they got a vision.
Exactly.
And they got a sound that they want to hear. And the boys weren't cutting it. The playing was there. The fabulous, fabulous players played on this. And I said, I got to start shopping around and look for a studio to mix this with. So I started looking around Canada, because I didn't want to mix it in the States. I wanted someone in Canada. And I forget his name. I was in touch with... anyway, I can't remember his name. He's in Toronto. I contacted him. And in the meantime, while I was contacting him, a friend of mine called me the next day. And this is funny how this happened. A friend of mine called me the next day and said, Jim, long time no see. 25 years or 30 years has been gone past, and I haven't seen you. Lo and behold, was the guy that mixed my album in 93.
What?
And this guy, I said, Tom Ronan, his name is.
He used to
work with CBC, right?
No way!
Yeah. And Tom, how have you been? Long time no see. Jim, yeah, what's up? What are you doing? Well, I got this, Tom said to me. So I got this guy... He did an album, he said, on a 16-track, he said, like the one that you had in your studio. And he wants to look at remixing it. I was just checking with you to see if you still had your 16-track from the old studio. I said, yeah, I still have it. He said, cool. He said, I'll get back to you on that. I said, what have you been up to? And I told him about this song. And I said, I'm at a stage here now. I said, I'm looking to get this song mixed. I said, I didn't like the way they had that song mixed. I said, I want to get it mixed. I said, so I've been looking. And I didn't ask him, because I didn't want to put him on the spot. And then after, chatting there for a while, telling him about the song, he said, I wouldn't mind taking a crack at it. I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, okay, let's do that. In I comes to his setup. And we started mixing. We must have mixed the song about 8 times.
Oh, my God.
Tom was getting a little frustrated with me, right? Because it wasn't in the pocket where I wanted it, right? And I said, bear with me, Tom. Bear with me. We'll get through this, right? We're almost there, right? I said, put what I want where I want it. And we'll get through this song.
Yeah.
And that's what we've done. And the last time, the last two mixes that we did, I was out in my studio, and then he was in here in St. John's, and we were sending him back and forth. I was telling him what I wanted, because I wanted to hear it on my speakers, my system. And he was hearing it on his system, so we were hearing it on several different sets of speakers, and to try to get the song where I wanted it to. And finally, we got it. I said, I'm happy, we're there. The last thing we had to do was just thicken up the snare a little bit and make it punchy, because I wanted the song to sound like an old classic rock with a, like an old classic country song, I should say, with a classic rock taste to it, or feel to it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's what we achieved. And there it is.
Awesome, and I'm glad it all worked out there for you.
Right.
Now, how would you describe the sound of this song?
Well, as I was just saying, I think...
So say, like, some artist that you've taken...
Oh, some of the artists, okay. I think it's probably along the... Oh, my God. Hank Williams Jr., Brooks and Dunn, Bob Seger, all intertwined into a little bit of me, intertwined with those influences.
Yeah, that's interesting there. Yeah. And have you ever been called like a Bob Seger lookalike?
Well, many times, several times. Several times in the last month, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I keep getting that all the time. Sometimes I let my hair down because I got a lot of hair still there. And sometimes I let it down, and people will say, "I'm like, Jesus, Jim, you're just like Bob Seger, and you look just like..." Sorry for the bleep, but...
No, it's okay, it's okay. I can put an explicit tag on it. It's all good.
Yeah, and so you look and you sound like Bob Seger, too. Cool, man, thank you. I'll take it.
Well, that's wonderful. We're actually going to get to that song very shortly. Now, we're actually going to save the jingles for another time, because there are some ones that I really want to talk to you about.
Okay, yeah.
But we'll get to the new song shortly.
Okay.
For people who want to find you and learn more about Jim Wildfinger, do you have like a website or socials you're working on? What's the best way to reach you?
Right now, I'm just on Facebook and Instagram, and I'm working on getting a website up so that people can... Have a landing page to go to, and now in the meantime, the song was released on March 28th, so it's on all streaming platforms if they want to, you know, download or stream the song. But to reach me, Facebook would be Jim Mercer Wildfinger, and you know, send me a friend request and or drop in and listen to some of my songs.
Well, Jim, this has been an absolute pleasure getting to know you a lot more than I would have had before.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to getting you in again when you do get that album out and whenever you get it ready. But whenever you have it ready, I'll be waiting. Jim Mercer, or a.k.a. Wildfinger, thanks for doing this.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
And that was Jim Mercer, a.k.a. Wildfinger, here on Musical Connections. And here is that very song that amassed over 100,000 views on Facebook, as well as 1,200 shares. Here's Don't Tell Me What to Do from Wildfinger Jim Mercer on the Musical Connections podcast.
Don't tell me what to do. Well, we can hang out here all night and tell each other stories about the good times we all had back in the days of glory. But now I'm getting older and more settled in my ways. Before we go any further, baby, there's something that I gotta say. Don't tell me what to do, and I won't tell you. Let's just love on each other, baby, and that's the way I'll lose. Don't tell me what to do, and I won't tell you. You can tell me anything that you want, but don't tell me what to do. Well, we can do anything you want, that's if you want to. Maybe go out somewhere for dinner, maybe a drink or two. Or we can hang out at the local bar and dance the night away. But before we go any further, baby, there's something that I gotta say.
Don't tell me what to do, and I won't tell you. Let's just love on each other, baby, and dance away our blues. Don't tell me what to do, and I won't tell you. You can tell me anything that you want, but don't tell me what to do. Just love on each other, baby, and that's the way I'll move. Don't tell me what to do, and I won't tell you. You can tell me anything that you want, but don't tell me what to do. Yeah, you can tell me anything that you want, but don't tell me what to do.
That wraps up Musical Connections for another week. A big thank you to Jim Mercer, a.k.a. Wildfinger, for joining me as my guest, and to all the musicians who contributed their songs for Newfound releases. Thank you all so much for being a part of this show and for sharing the music of Newfoundland and Labrador with the world. Now, for any new listeners out there or for people who are just joining this podcast once more, how can you help our sector grow one song at a time? Well, here's what you can do. You can follow me on social media to keep up to date with any Musical Connections news. You can follow me on Facebook at Zach Snow or Zach Snow NL on Instagram. And you can also subscribe to the Musical Connections NL YouTube channel. I'm trying to get to 1,000 subscribers for that, so make sure to subscribe to the channel and support independent media. You can also follow and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite streaming platforms. RSS and Apple Music are preferred. And once you're done listening to an episode, make sure you leave a review there because it'll help spread the word about this show, it'll help grow the show, and it'll help grow our sector at the same time. The more people that listen to this podcast, the more people find out about this amazing talent that Newfoundland and Labrador is producing each and every single day. And of course, if you want to keep up to date with previous episodes of the podcast, head on over to waterfrontmedianl.ca/musical-connections-podcast. And stay up to date to my socials for any future interview news and news relating to this podcast. I'll be recording interviews all week for Musical Connections at the East Coast Music Awards Festival and Conference. You'll be hearing those over the next few weeks and months. And that does it for episode 122 of this podcast. Thank you so much again for connecting. I've been your host, Zach Snow. Join me next week where once more we will highlight the music of Newfoundland and Labrador. Stay safe, be kind to each other, and most importantly, stay connected. Until next time, bye for now.